Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plains Talkers Podcast, the show by casuals for casuals. I'm your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my Syracuse playing and not exactly doing as well as he should have, but at least he didn't go 0-5 host, Aramis Perez. Aramis, how you doing tonight, brother, man?
I'm tired.
You had a weekend, I guess, huh?
It was a long weekend. There were lots of things that happened. Played some Magic, had a tornado warning, good stuff.
Well, tornadoes are always fun, so... Yeah, we had a weekend here ourselves, though, so, but, you know, let's get into it. All right, so tonight, folks, welcome to our show. Again, this is the podcast for casuals by casuals, talking mainly about Magic the Gathering. So if you somehow stumbled onto us, well, we're glad you're here. But be that as it may, tonight we've got a pretty good full show, I would say. Mm-hmm. We're obviously going to talk about SCG Syracuse. You actually played in it. You know, we're going to talk about how you did, decks you played, bad matchups, and then kind of talk a little bit overall, go for more macro, you know, different deck types that were there. Dude, I don't have anything in combat. What are we combating tonight?
I guess that's going to depend on if we have time to combat.
That's a good point. So hopefully we'll have something to combat. I mean, if we have to, we'll do this on the fly. We're professionals. Okay, we're very professional here. Said no one ever. Okay,
that's the word you're going with.
Yeah, professional. So, and then during our second phase, we're going to talk a little bit more news. Man, there's just been fallout this week from whole Jerry Thompson leaving the MPL, and people are talking about Savic and whether or not he should have been tapped, and what does this mean for the MPL overall, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, top 30. Originally, it started out as top 32 players, and now it seems like they're going for more representation. Some people are even wondering if the MPL is going to have enough legs. And then we even have an email from Liz from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. She did write in again, so we will have some Ask Aramis, but there's still time. John, who's listening, if anybody wants to get in an email to us as well, feel free. You can email us podcast@plainstalkerspodcast.com. But let's go ahead and just jump right into SCG Syracuse, because holy cow, what a time.
Main phase.
Okay, SCG Syracuse. Wow, so you were there.
Yes.
You got there, what, Friday night you went out, right?
Yeah, I left, I had a half day at work, gave myself a half a day at work. I left around, what time was it, like maybe 2 o'clock? On Friday afternoon, got there like 4:30, got my hotel, you know, got to relax the night before, got to Grubhub some dinosaur barbecue, which was awesome.
Oh, isn't dinosaur great?
I love dinosaur. So, you know...
Well, you're from Western New York, so you kind of know.
I knew of it. I didn't actually have it until they built one in Troy.
Yeah. It's still not as good in Troy as it is back home in Syracuse and Rock.
No, it was amazing. But that's, you know, that'll be part of what I talk about, because it's, you know, food is important.
Food's very important.
But, you know, I was able to get to bed at a reasonable time. The tournament started at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, but there was like, you know, you had to make sure you're registered, your deck list was all set, all that nonsense. So get to the venue Saturday morning. It was the On Center in Syracuse.
Yep. Been there many times.
Beautiful venue. I loved it. It was great. Walking into it, it was just, I was totally gobsmacked. I hadn't been to a large tournament like this in 16 years.
Oh, wow.
Really? The last really big tournament I'd gone to was Nationals, but Regionals in 2003. And just walking in and seeing just, you know, tables and tables and tables and all these chairs set up for upwards of 1,000+ players potentially. Was amazing. Having, you know, seeing the feature match area, seeing the vendors on the side, you know, on the side selling cards and stuff, you know, getting to see a Black Lotus in person, which I really had only ever done like maybe once.
I actually saw one played once. I still cherish the memory.
Yeah, I saw more Power 9 than I had ever seen before. Unfortunately, they were all behind glass cases, but
of course they were.
It was gorgeous. It was great. Seeing a lot of the cards that I had that were like 75-cent uncommons, now worth $45 a piece, was, you know, it hurt me a little bit because makes me wish I'd kept my old cards. But yeah, anyway, the reason that everybody's actually listening is they want to know how I did.
Yes, they absolutely
spoiler
don't.
Spoiler alert, I didn't win.
No, of course not.
I did not win. I did not make day two.
Which I was surprised at, but I still think with your deck list, we talked about it last week, I think people are loaded for your deck.
Well, I think I could have made day two. I think I actually could have. There were a couple of, two of the matches that I lost. I finished 4-5. There were 444 players that registered. I believe I finished 230th, so kind of middle of the pack.
Well, there you go, 50%. That'll
yeah,
work.
Basically middle of the pack. Two of the matches that I think I probably should have won, I ended up not winning. I dug myself a really early hole. I started 0-2, and
yeah, you were texting me. I was like, ooh.
Yeah. So I kind of had to go in like a massive heater in order to have a shot at day two. I won the next four rounds though, so I was at 4-2. So I was sitting kind of pretty. And the way the tournament was breaking down, it was looking like X and 3 was going to make it.
Right.
So if I'd finished like 5-3-1 or 6-3, I would have made it. So at that point, I would have had to, you know, I had a loss to give. I had to win two out of my three next matches. That's not a bad position to be in after six rounds in a 9-round tournament. I dropped the next three. So.
Yeah. Well, when you were texting me, I mean, it was so, you know, for me, you went and did that. I got an opportunity to take the fiance home. I was actually not far. I passed you at one point, twice actually. We went back home to Rochester. So I got to take Wendy, my cousin, shout out to Steve and Tracy, actually 25 years together and married. They had a big party this weekend. So we had always intended to go, which is why, again, I couldn't go with you to this. Mm-hmm. And we woke up at 4 a.m. on Monday or Saturday, and Wendy's like, hey, are we going to see your sister? And so I texted her. I was like, no, I don't think so. And she's like, what if we went to Rochester now and you just took me around for the day? We just had an adventure. And I was like, oh my God, yes. So we got up in the morning and we drove into Rochester. It's a 3-hour drive.
Yeah.
And I took her to this place, the Chit Chat Cafe in Victor, which is just amazing food for breakfast. We went to Casa Larga Winery and did a wine tour. Well, no tour, but a lot of tasting. A whole lot of tasting. And you've heard me complain about this, and you know from Western New York, I haven't had a good chicken wing out here since I moved here. Mm-hmm. And she never understood it. She thought I was just being kind of a bit
snobbish.
Yeah.
Chicken wing.
So while you're texting me all this stuff that you're doing, I'm sitting here going, you know, like, I took her to Sticky Lips Barbecue, which is this rib joint in Rochester, because I didn't want to take her to the Soar, because she'd been to the Soar out here. So I didn't want to go to Tahoe's because I wanted to finish the day and not end up, you know, sick to my stomach because I can't not get a plate. Garbage plate, people look it up. So she had a chicken wing, though, and she's like, I see your point. And she actually tried to figure out why. Like, she's like, I think they season it before they fry it. And she's trying to, like, noodle out why it's so different. But it was, we had a really great day. But I was just like, oh, and I'm reading through your text, which I was going through this history, just reading through your texts and stuff. And I'm just like, oh, he's 0-2. Oh, he's going to Durin. He's going to do it. He's going to go 0-5. Oh, he won third. Damn it. Well, now I'm rooting for him. And then you were like, run three in a row. Shit, I lost two more.
Yep.
I was like, oh.
Overall, though, I will say this. It was a fantastic day. 9 rounds of Magic. Like you always say, a bad day of Magic is better than basically any day
at
work.
A good day at work.
Yeah. and this was not a bad day of Magic. I will say that.
Not even a little.
No, not even a little. Venue was great. People were great. I can go through, if you want, I can go through sort of like the rounds that I played, who I played, and sort of how it went.
Absolutely. I definitely think
so before the tournament started, they had a players meeting, and a guy sitting at the top of this like raised stage almost, where like the customer services were, like where you'd put your match slips in or register for side events and whatever. He's talking about how, you know, this is a competitive level REL, you know, your opponent does not have your best interest at heart, so it's up to you to know the rules. Keep in mind that the Planeswalkers in War of the Spark have static abilities. We've been getting a lot of judge calls over this. Please make sure that you understand what these cards do. Spoiler alert, that didn't happen.
Really?
Yeah, there were a lot of judge calls. A lot of judge calls over the new planeswalkers. I actually ran into an issue during one of my matches with the new planeswalkers. It didn't end up in a judge call, but both me and my opponent both forgot what one of the planeswalkers did. I'll get to that in a minute, but it was one of those things where after it happened, we're like, "Oh, duh, should have remembered that." Oh well, now what? Let's keep going. Okay. So it worked out really well.
You screwed up?
We both did.
Oh, okay.
We both did. So here's how it went out. After that was all done, you know, we did our registration and everything. Round one. So you know a tournament's not going to go well when you're playing Bant Nexus and Mull to Five on your first hand.
Ooh.
So in the back of my mind, I'm going, okay, it's going to be one of those tournaments. Gotcha. Okay. Let's see what we can do. So game one had no shot. I mean, it's Bant Nexus. You Mull to Five. I don't care what you're playing. You should probably lose that game. And I did. I did get to see a lot of his deck because I was able to fire up a couple of Thought Erasures, which was good. Game two was a little bit closer. Actually had him down to a point where I almost had him dead. I almost did. But he was able to recur Tameo. And
oh, shit.
It got to the point where his library was land, Nexus, Nexus. That was his deck. That was all that was left. Oof. And he was able to get stuff out and start recurring. The one mistake, it was like I was thinking I had played an Ugin and I destroyed his, I believe it was his Tameo, but he still had Wilderness Reclamation. He still had a Teferi. He still had, no, it wasn't a Teferi. He had Wilderness Reclamation. He had an Ezcanta that was about to flip. And I was like, oh, I have to kill Tameo because anything I kill, Tameo will just get back.
Right.
He drew another Tameo and that was the end of that. So he, yes. You know, I played it out, made sure that he knew that he was able to go through the loop, and I'm like, all right, you got me, no big deal. So I was 0-1 at that point. So I was like, all right, I could bounce back from this. That was a bad first round, no big deal. Round two, I'm paired up against Mono Red, and I'm thinking, oh, this is a winnable matchup. I could even my record here. Mono Red's not too
Oops.
Bad.
Oops.
He fried me real quick, game one.
Mono Red is legitimately faster.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's legitimately faster for giving it bigger cards.
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy's mono red deck, I'll say this. I lost 0-2. The first two rounds I lost were 0-2. I did not win a single game. And
wow.
I mean, it was a little bit rattling for me because I hadn't lost a match with Esper Control going into this tournament. And I knew obviously that the competition was going to be a lot harder than a typical FNM. Nothing against the guys at Kerwin's because they're great. It's just I think you do get stepped up a notch because most people going to these tournaments are generally the best players at their respective stores anyway.
Right.
So it's going to be harder. You're not going to be facing off against people bringing precons and stuff like that. These people are bringing tier one meta, and these people have practiced and tuned. And I think looking back, if I had had a little bit more time to prepare and practice, I think I might have done a little bit better. But, you know, who really knows at that point? So I'm not going to split hairs too much about that.
I mean, I gotta kind of wonder because, again, it seems like the meta kind of shifted. And, I mean, you and I are, again, it's in the title of the podcast. We are casuals, you know, as the day is long. We're competitive and we don't want to, we're not, you know, gutless casuals mm-hmm. by any stretch. I mean, you're a better player than I am by any stretch of the imagination. However, you know, I consider myself above average. Mm-hmm. And, but be that as it may, I mean, definitely, I think if I was to give anything, it's like Esper Control. I mean, it didn't even top 10. Like, it was Esper Midrange that was 8th.
Looking back, I think now that I had a chance to look at how the tournament finished out, I think there was only one Esper Control deck in the top 32.
Yeah. I really believe that Mono Red, as well as these damn Super Friend decks, which we will talk about...
Mm-hmm.
They are designed to kill Esper. Well, like they're trying to kill Esper and Grixis. They're designed to kill Control.
Yeah, and I think I'll say this. I think right now the Control decks. Remember, and I said this too in new standard formats. It takes the Control decks a few weeks to figure things out.
Oh yeah, it's not over.
Yeah, it ain't over. And Esper's not going anywhere.
Yeah, the arms race is still on.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Esper's just trying to figure out which exact tactical nuke it wants to fire off, and it hasn't figured it out yet.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure it's there somewhere.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
sure people aren't looking at it. Things, I'm still amazed, like things like Sorcerer's Spyglass hasn't found its way back in yet. Things that can handle trying to shut some things down.
Mm-hmm.
Sorcerer's Spyglass seems like a card that would be really good. Oh man, I should totally, if we know we're going to put cards, side note, we should totally, I should put them into the green screen so they show up behind me. There, but yes, Sorcerer's Spyglass, yeah, we'll edit this part out. So what do we have? 15, 18. Okay. Sorcerer's Spyglass would be one of those cards that can kind of shut down some of these planeswalkers. You know, it's not going to shut down their static ability. You know, Teferi's still not going to let you cast anything on your, you know, other than your turn.
Well, the problem is that now they have so, there's a lot of the planeswalkers have like redundant abilities. So it's like, right, all right, I'm going to shut down Teferi here or Dominaria. Well, Teferi Time Raveler is going to bounce that anyway. Or Ugin's going to just flat out destroy it. Or, you know,
Ugin has to be removed quickly.
Yeah.
He does. And it, and that's just it. It's decks that, and maybe it's also Esper is not necessarily yet favoring removal of planeswalkers. You have Vraska's Contempt, but did you sideboard, did you have Elderspell in the sideboard at all?
I did not, but I know that there were people who did.
Okay, because so. It's amazing to me, I'm looking at deck lists, and I'm a casual, I'm a brewer, I'm not, you know, anybody worthwhile, but I mean, if I was brewing a deck, I'd be like, Elderspell is one of those, we talked about it during pre-release, you know, Elderspell is one of those cards that, you know, in a planeswalker format seems like it's a no-brainer for having at least two in the sideboard.
I will say this. I think it's because the Super Friends deck showed up so late in prep that a lot of people didn't make the switch in time. I think that's probably what it is. They kind of came out of nowhere.
It'll be there this week, though.
Yeah, they're gonna. I think you're going to see Elderspell showing up. I'm probably going to be changing my sideboard a little bit to include at least one copy of Elderspell. But the mono-red deck that I played, remember how I said that there were three versions of mono-red floating around last week? How there was one with Experimental Frenzy, one with Risk Factor, one with Chandra?
Right.
The guy I played against with mono-red had all three.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. That's insane.
So it's like, I there's really not much that I can do to remove all of those threats. So he was able to resolve Chandra on me. You know, I was able to stop his Risk Factors. You know, I took like 8 damage from Risk Factor. Didn't really care. I was gaining a bunch of life. I was able to counter his Experimental Frenzies, but he was able to ultimate Chandra.
Yeah,
that's couldn't just stop it.
And once Chandra is out, it's really tough to deal with. Chandra's still tough to deal with. If you're not exiling her, if you don't have, you know, a Vraska's Contempt sitting in your, you know, sitting in your main deck, you're screwed.
Yeah, it's a time bomb. It's a ticking freaking time bomb, and there's not much you can do about it. But props to him for having that, having all those weapons in his deck on top of the normal suite of red burn and creatures, because there was not a lot that I could do.
Right. There's nothing you could do.
So, you know, I took my lumps on that one, so I was 0-2-0-4. Not feeling too great about myself, knowing that if I lost one more match, I'd almost definitely be out of contention for day two, but knowing that I still have like a sliver of a chance, but basically thinking, okay, I have to win the next 7. Which is a tall order.
You were doing all right, though, man. I thought for sure you had it.
Well, round 3, I got paired up against Simic Ramp, which was a deck that was getting a little bit of hype going into the tournament. This deck,
really? I hadn't heard anything about it. When you told me that, I was like, huh. And then I went looking for it, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, okay, so this deck plays sort of like Simic Nexus. It's got like the Growth Spirals and the Tameos and stuff like that. But instead of playing Nexus of Fate, it plays like Entrancing Melody or Mass Manipulation. So it's like, I don't have to kill your planeswalkers if I just steal them.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is where we ran into the mistake. First big mistake of the tournament. So we're playing.
What for you?
Oh, this was both of us. This was a 50-50. Oh, so okay. We're going back and forth. We're playing. I think it's game 2 or 3 that this happens. He plays Tameo.
Yeah.
And he had played another Planeswalker. I think it was a Teferi Time Raveler. I play my own Teferi. I tuck his Teferi. A couple turns go by. I play my own Time Raveler. Plus him. So I could play sorceries as an instant.
Right.
He draws his Teferi that I had tucked. And I said, I have a response during your draw step after your draw. Because with, you know, you can play instants during that time. So cast Instant Speed Thought Erasure.
Good choice.
Yeah. Go to, and I want to get that Teferi. He casts Dovin's Veto. counters
Son
it.
Son of a bitch.
So
he can't though, can he?
No, he It was a bunch of weird stuff. He had somehow gotten it got to the point maybe I didn't do Teferi. He had drawn it. Oh yeah, I didn't do Teferi. He had drawn
okay,
it
because
I didn't have Teferi time over there. He had drawn it. He didn't cast it for some reason. He was holding it for something else. I forget what it was.
Okay.
So I cast Thought Erasure on my turn. He Dovin's vetoes it. That gets countered. We move on like maybe to the end of that turn. Turn isn't over yet. The player next to us goes, "You realize that Tamio prevents cards from being discarded." And we're both like, "Oh."
Oh,
whoops.
Wow.
So
yeah.
Basically, the mistake that I made was casting the Thought Erasure. The mistake that he made was wasting the Dovin's veto. He didn't have to.
Right.
Because the best thing that would have happened is I would get to see his hand and then know that he has a Dovin's veto. Oh, no. But yeah, so
right.
That was a 50-50 shot. And he's like the other guy sitting next to us says, "You should call a judge." And he's like, whatever. I don't really care. So he ends up losing the match in three games. I was able to win the match. That play didn't really make a difference in the outcome of the game.
Right.
Because I think I ended up having... He ended up winning because I won game one. He won game two. So he was able to lock me down at that one. Game three, it was back and forth for a while. He was gaining some life, but I think I was able to... I locked him out. I had Narset Teferi and another Teferi.
And oh, you had both Teferis.
I had both
now?
Teferis and Narset, so there's nothing he could do, really,
yeah,
of any consequence. So he scooped him up, and that was, you know, whatever. That was the end of that match. So I was 1-2. I wasn't dead yet, you know. True Monty Python style, missing an arm and a leg. It's just a flesh wound.
Right.
So next match is Azorius Aggro. Another match I should totally win.
Not a good match.
Actually,
not a good matchup.
I destroyed this guy.
Did you really?
Yeah. It went three games. But
okay.
The only reason that it did was game one, he was beating me down pretty good. I was able to stabilize and typical Esper control fashion, just ground him to a halt. And he had nothing he could do. I locked him out. Game two, I should have won this game. He had an epic top deck against me, and total credit to him. His name was Chris.
Okay.
He played Dauntless Bodyguard turn one. I'm like, whatever. Turn two, he plays... Sky Marcher and I believe Hunted Witness.
Ooh.
So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm taking some hits. Turn three, he plays History Benalia. So I'm like, okay.
He's getting nut draw.
He's getting nuts draw. And I think I thought I erasured him, saw he didn't really have much. Turn three, I couldn't cast it on turn three because my hand was full of tap lands. I had Cry of the Carnarium in my hand.
Ooh.
So he was ticking up. He ticked up his History of Benalia to two counters. I was going to play my land. I was going to play Cry of the Carnarium next turn because when I untapped, he convokes out Loxodon Hierarch. Gives his knights +1/+1.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, wah, wah. So he just annihilates me at that one. So I'm like, all right. Nothing I can do. Turn three, I lock him out with Teferi, and he scoops. One of the things he did was kind of weird was that I had Thought Erasured him, I believe, on either the first or the third game, and it was creature, and Glacial Fortress. He had three planes
wow.
in play. I discard one of the creatures, whatever. He never plays the land, which I found was
what?
Very strange because it's known information. There's no reason for him to hold it. He literally
right.
missed land drops for three turns because he didn't want to play the Glacial Fortress.
That doesn't make any sense.
It didn't make any sense to me. I don't know if his mind was really in the game. I'm not sure what he was thinking. He didn't... Like, nobody that I played dropped after their round regardless of what their record was. So I don't know what was going on with him, but it was a weird play. It's just something that sort of caught my eye. But so that brought me back up even to 2-2.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm back in this. I can do pretty well. And round five comes up. We're shuffling up. Esper Control Mirror.
Wah, wah.
So up until this point, all my matches had either gone to time or ended with like a minute left in the round.
Right.
I play the Esper Control Mirror. This match was over in 15 minutes. It was probably one of the fastest Esper mirrors that I've ever seen. Poor guy didn't have a chance. I drew the perfect
chance.
I crushed him. I think I drew the perfect hands against in both games. The first game, I got my Teferi out turn three after a turn two thought erasure. Nothing he could do. I locked him out.
Right.
The next game, I had Narset, Teferi, Ugin.
Oh, wow. Not even Thief of Sanity. Like, you didn't...
Don't even board it in.
Oh, you didn't board it in.
I don't think so. I'd have to look at my sideboard guy, but I don't think I boarded it in the mirror. I might have, but I just didn't see him. But I locked him out with my Planeswalkers. So it was super quick. There wasn't really a whole much that happened. He drew nothing that game, either one. And I had answers for everything he was doing. Which, I mean,
nice.
That'll occasionally happen, but just, I got the nut draw when I needed it, I guess. So that brought me back above water to 3-2. And then I played Is It Phoenix for the first time in the tournament in round six.
Right.
So Is It Phoenix has a nice little wrinkle in it where if they get their Phoenix in the graveyard, they cast Finale of, what was that? The Red Finale.
Yeah.
Finale of Promise.
Yes.
Yeah, that does your three spells all by itself.
Yes, it does.
And yeah, I found that out the hard way. He beat me game one with that. Game two, he had me down pretty low, but I'm trying to remember how I locked him out. I don't really remember how I locked him out, but I was able to establish control at four life, and I think I was able to get like the Wrath and the Wrath's Contempt, and I think I had Teferi ticking up to just about ultimate, and he scooped.
Oh, that was good of him.
Game three, I drew like Mono Absorb. Or like all my life gain spells. So it's just anything he was casting, I was killing and gaining life off of it, and he could never really get going. So I was able to get that one. So that brought me up to 4-2. So at that point, you know, like I was saying earlier, win 2 out of 3 and I get in. Round 7, I ran into a deck that I hadn't even ever heard of before.
Okay.
4-color Command the Dreadhorde.
Yeah, I've heard of this deck. I just heard about it yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything really about it until I really was facing off against it. This thing is scary. It runs Tamiyo. Yep. It runs Teferi. It runs, like, I think it may even run Liliana. It runs a bunch of Planeswalkers.
Well, I'm looking right at it. It's Branchwalker, Druid, Wild Growth Walker,
yep.
Jade Light. So it's doing the Explore package.
Yes.
2 Massacre Girls. Planeswalkers are Narset, Teferi, Time Reveler, Sorin, Tamiyo, Vraska, Golgari Queen, Teferi Hero, and Ugin.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4 Command the Dreadhordes. And what the Command the Dreadhorde is choose any number of target creature and or Planeswalker cards in graveyards. Command the Dreadhorde deals damage to you equal to the total converted mana cost of those cards. Put them onto the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah, it's basically, it's almost like Dredge.
Yeah, so...
For standard.
Yeah,
thank you.
So, you know,
needed that.
When I was playing the deck, I had no idea what it was. You know, so I'm playing, so I'm thinking, okay, it's like a some weird Sultai, it's not Sultai mid-range, it's like a Planeswalker control deck or whatever. He's playing a bunch of Planeswalkers. I'm trying to, you know, handle them as best I can. I cast Thought Erasure, the guy has a Tamiyo and two Dreadhordes in his hand.
Oh,
and I'm like,
shit.
What the crap is this? So I take a Dreadhorde, because there's not really much else I can do, because I didn't have a counterspell for the Tamiyo. And, yeah, so he didn't actually do it against me. He didn't have to because he was able to just crush me with other stuff, with his creatures. But if he wanted to, if he had a Wild Growth Walker and some Explore creatures in his graveyard, the amount of life he could gain to counteract whatever Command the Dreadhorde would have done, ugh.
Yeah, I'm thinking about putting that deck together.
I didn't have much of a chance in that matchup. I definitely think that I would need to do some serious tuning for this matchup. He had Elder Spells in his sideboard against me, too, so it was
frack.
Yeah, so it was a bad time for that one. So that dropped me down to 4-3, and I was like, all right, I had a loss to give, and I gave it. Now it's time to win the next two. And I ran into Is It Phoenix again. And this time... This time they got the better of me. They took me to 3 games. I won the first one, dropped the next two.
Wow.
It was just he had he had the answers for me this time, and the first game was hilarious. Both of us didn't miss a land drop for the first 10 turns.
Oh wow.
It was nothing happened. He cast a turn 2 Goblin Electromancer. I immediately killed it, and then nothing happened for like 10 turns. And he's like, wow, this is riveting. I'm like, I'm sorry, I fell asleep. Did you say something? So it was long, it was drawn out, but basically what that allowed was that, okay, with Izzet Phoenix, you got a lot of card draw, maybe a little bit of burn. With Esper Control, you got a fistful of counterspells.
Yep.
So I was able to just, you know, grind him away once we actually started casting cards and stopped playing lands every turn. I was able to win game one, but games two and three, he was able to get Finale of Revelation out. He had Narset out against me. He had Saheeli out. The third game, it was close. I almost had it. He had 14 servos out with a Phoenix.
Not much you can do there.
I cast Cry of the Carnarium,
ooh,
which resolved, exiled his board. I was at one life. He had a Phoenix in his hand.
God.
And he had drawn it two turns before. So nothing I could do about that. You know, it's just, that's just how it goes sometimes. You had
that's
the answer,
magic.
But yeah, he had the answer for my answer. So what are you going to do? So I was 4-4 at that point. I was like, okay, now we're playing for pride. I gotta win my next match to go 5-4. And I shame myself by losing to elves. That's right, I said elves.
Yeah. Dude, elves is tough. Right now, with all the ramp that's going on, it's not just elves. It's the ramp that comes with it. Nissa is ridiculous. I don't understand why she's not in more
didn't see Nissa
lists.
I did not see Nissa. It was turn one Llanowar Elf, turn two Steelleaf Champion.
Oh, shut the hell up. What are you supposed to do with that?
There's not much I could do about that. I was able to hold him off for a while. He had Elvish Clan Callers. He had Paradise Druid. He had what else was there? It was a lot. It's not cheese.
Just a whole lot of elves.
It was a lot of elves. A lot of big elves. So he was able to just sort of beat me down. I don't remember seeing a Wrath at all. So, you know, nothing I could really do about that. He was splashing red. That's right. He was splashing red for Rhythm of the Wild.
I was going to say, Rhythm of the Wild coming in. So things
and Cindervines.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, you're dead.
Yeah, so, you know, he had Growth Chamber Guardian, so it's like, all right, play that. It's got Riot. Put a counter on it. Get another one.
Okay, let's talk about Growth Chamber Guardian for a minute. That card sucks. Like, I am playing that card. I have that card. But it is, like, if you watch me play anything online, and I did do some arena streaming this weekend, Growth Chamber Guardian is the card I board out almost 80% of the time. I'm like, this card just, it's useless. It becomes bigger, granted. So you spend four to make it a 4/4.
Three.
Oh, yeah. Three?
Three.
Three is to adapt?
Yeah, adapt three. It's just, three mana
so,
to adapt two.
So five to make a 4/4. Over final cost analysis, five mana to make a 4/4.
Okay.
As is it.
It's good
it
against...
lets you search for another one. Don't get me wrong, but it's still like...
It's good against control. Because a 4/4 is a body that control has to deal with. And the right. fact that, okay, you kill that one, here's another one. Kill that one, here's another one. Kill that one, here's another one.
I guess I understand on some on a cerebral level, but I mean from just a playability level, like what I've been doing,
it's
with,
solid.
You know, I don't know. I don't think it's that solid.
I'll say this: it's not an all-star by any means. It's not like the greatest thing in the world, but it's a solid threat that needs to be answered. And when you adapt it or put a counter on it in any way, it guarantees that you're drawing a threat that has to be answered for at least four consecutive turns.
Well, it's kind of funny. When I've been seeing it played around lately, people have been putting counters on it that aren't, like, adapting it. And I'm like, you're a moron. Like, you should adapt it.
Well, and
like, you're putting one counter on it. What good is that? Means you can't put two.
No, but the thing is that, like, with this deck, for Rhythm of the Wild, it was basically 2-mana, 3/3 draw card.
Uh-huh.
That's good. Oh, by the way, it also can't be countered.
Right.
So it's a 3/3 that can't be countered that draws you a card for 2-mana. If that was what the stats...
Right, and lets you go search for another one.
Well, that's what the draw card basically is. But it's draw a card, but that card's also another copy of it. So right. If you think about it, if there was a card in Standard that cost 2-mana, was a 3/3, couldn't be countered, and found another copy of itself when it entered the battlefield... You'd play that in a heartbeat.
Perhaps. I'm like I said, I keep removing it. Like, it just in this current meta. Because, again, I've been playing a lot of Bant midrange. I'm enjoying the deck. The deck is kind of fun. But it just is a little bit...
Well, green's not good in that capacity right now, I guess.
Right.
Because...
Green is ramp.
Green is ramp and super friends.
Yeah.
So yeah, at the end of the day, like I said, I finished 4-5, which for me, I think that was the biggest disappointment because I've never finished above 500 in a big tournament like this. And I was really, really hoping that I would get over the hump on this one. And sitting at 4-2, I mean, you got to feel good about your chances at that point. So, right. You know, I was disappointed overall in my performance. I feel like I had a deck that was good enough to make it to day two, you know, maybe not win. But, you know, I think if a couple things had broken my way, I could have very easily been 6-2. But then again, you know, flip side, I could have very easily been 2-7.
I was going to say, or 0-7.
Yeah. Well, no.
You were starting off pretty rough.
I started off rough. But, you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes it's variance. Sometimes it's just the deck you play just has your number that particular day. I feel like my results could have been a little bit better. But I'm not super disappointed in that. So I had a blast either way. If another tournament like that came along in the near future, I wouldn't be able to go to like one right away. But if another one comes along in the future, I would definitely want to do it again. It was a great experience. Kind of wish I had like a bunch more disposable income because my God, the cards that they had that you could buy. they had masterpieces. They had Power 9. They had dual lands. They had foils of everything you could possibly think of.
Right.
It was great.
Well, I mean, and, you know, it sounded like you had a really good event, period. And, you know, but, I mean, it was definitely just it was one of those strange events. I didn't get a chance to watch too much. Like I said, I was, you know, we were out of town Saturday, so I mainly got to watch a lot Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I mean... It's obvious that the big champion was the big winner was definitely, you know, the Super Friends decks.
Jeskai Super Friends.
It looks like these
yeah.
are actually a thing. So I mean, you take a look at what's going on. I mean, right here on the screen behind me. I mean, I put in, you know, I just took a quick screenshot of the Jeskai, the winning deck. You know, 4 Narset, 3 Saheeli. 4 Teferi, Time Raveler, 2 Karn Scions, 4 Sarkins, which are freaking stupid, and 1 Teferi Hero of Dom, 2 Mox Ambers, and a whole bunch of cantrips.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that deck is genius.
Yeah, it's all Planeswalkers all the time.
Yeah. But I'm amazed you didn't see it. I mean, how many were there? Do we know?
444 people total.
No, but how many people were playing like a variation of the Super Friend?
Oh, Jeskai?
Well, there was a Jeskai Super Friend. There was an Esper Super Friend.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that deck actually could be something.
All right. There were 6 Jeskai Super Friends decks that made day 2.
Right.
There were 6 of the 4 color Dreadhorde that made day 2. I did see one of those. There were 4 Esper Super Friends that made day 2, and 6 Grixis Control.
Is Grixis like a whiff? Are we just announcing that at this point, or have they just not broke the code on that?
I think they haven't broke the code on it yet. I think it's one of those decks that it's like I said before, the power's there. It's sort of like the Nexus deck, you know? It's always kind of there on the fringes. You got to be aware of it. You got to be worried about it, but it's not quite there yet for some reason. I think it performed reasonably well here. Maybe the metagame's just not quite right for it.
Right.
But it's the power cannot be denied with that deck, for sure.
I don't disagree. I don't. I mean, it just looks like power. It seems clunky.
Yeah.
It seems slow.
Yeah.
And it seems like the meta, even with all of these Planeswalkers, I mean, the one thing about adding in uncommon Planeswalkers is that it's weird. In pre-release, it slowed the game down. But in Constructed, it seems to have put its foot on the gas.
You know what, like, I think?
It's,
I'm sorry, but I just thought about this. I'm looking at the lists, and you know what I think it is? I think the biggest difference between... The biggest reason I think that Grixis Control isn't doing as well as it It doesn't have access to Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, and all the other Super Friends decks do. Jeskai can play it, Esper can play it, four-colored Dreadhorde plays it.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
You know, between that and Teferi Time Raveler, not having access to those two Planeswalkers, I think, is the biggest reason that Grixis probably isn't doing that well right now, because those two Planeswalkers are the ones that can just really dominate the game, besides Narset, by the way. Narset is freaking crazy.
Yeah, Narset is... She's the sleeper of this set.
She's seen playing Vintage, apparently.
Yeah, by far, she is the sleeper of this set. You know, I don't think anybody was high. I mean, we were all high on her when you read it. You're like, oh, that looks like it could be something. But I don't think we all realize what a Swiss Army knife card she is.
Yeah.
In that, you know, she pretty much can go into almost any deck and make an impact. If you're playing blue, you should be playing Narset, period.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is that it's as Kanta on a stick. You get two activations, and the biggest difference, though, it's a very subtle difference, and it only really comes into play if the games go super, super long. With Search for Azcanta, the cards you search, they go on the bottom of your library in any order. When Narset does it, it's a random order. So that's something to keep in mind when you're playing the card. It's a subtle difference, but it actually does change the physical mechanics of when you search, because you actually kind of have to shuffle those three cards together and not see what they are when you put them on the bottom, because they could technically call a judge on you for that.
Right.
So that's just something to keep in mind. If you're playing both of those cards, just remember that with Azcanta, the Sunken Ruin, you choose the order that those three cards go on the bottom. With Narset, you have to shuffle them.
Well, I get the feeling that their idea with designing her was to give us Azcanta a little while longer.
Yeah.
She's rotation proof. Azcanta will rotate out in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to kind of keep, you know, some of these Bant decks alive. But I think when Nexus leaves, it's, you know, the whole meta is going to change. When we lose Teferi and Nexus, like, just the idea. I mean, depending on what comes in core and where they go next,
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that the meta is not, you know. My real concern is that we're going to see a mono red, mono black, like, field, where we're just going to go mono colored and stick away from, you know, and we've been playing for so long in the guilds now.
I don't think so, because remember, guilds doesn't rotate with this rotation. So all the shocklands and all this multicolor stuff, the Guilds of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance were heavier multicolor sets.
Right.
So there's still going to be a very heavy multicolor theme going into the next year.
Right.
And with the Shockland, you're still going to have... you're not going to have as good mana as you have now, but you're going to have good mana.
Well,
and with the new set coming out, too, in the fall, I imagine there's going to be another new set of dual lands.
Well, what I'm hearing is that it's possible... What word around the campfire is that they're going to put the Czech lands back into core set. They'll throw the Czechs into core. So
that
they have
too
rares
fast.
In the core set. So I still wish they'd do fetch, but they never will. But... I mean,
fetch in Modern Horizons.
Huh? They should do fetch in Modern Horizons.
There is a fetch in Modern Horizons.
What?
There is. You didn't know about that?
No.
Yeah. It's, I forget, it's called, like, Prismatic Vista, I think, or something like that.
No
shit. And it's tap, pay one life, sacrifice, search your library for a basic land, and put it into play.
Any basic land.
Any basic land. So it can't fetch duels.
Oh.
So it's a fixed fetch land, but it'll fetch anything.
That might fit my that might work. But you know, I mean, I'm looking at this though, and it, you know, I'm checking the open results, and the reason I brought up, like, you know, I'm kind of concerned about where things are going is that if you look, mono red was 40% of the top 10. It was 4th, 5th, 6th, and 10th. That's pretty good.
No, mono red's sticking around right now.
Yeah, I mean, and whichever flavor you use, whether it's you know, Chandra or Risk Factor or Experimental or some sort of hodgepodge, which I've been playing kind of a hodgepodge with it.
I like the idea of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, I like the flexibility of Experimental Frenzy but I'm still running 4 Chandras. Like, I realize that that's a predominant 4 drop, and it kind of beats the red deck, like, mindset. But, God, Chandra is a game ender. Like, she just ends the game.
Yeah, because you have to either counter her or Vraska's contempt her. Otherwise, she's going to deal damage to you in one way or another. She will do it.
Yeah, so it's a thing. Mono Red is not going to probably go away for a little while. But with that, I mean, the other big thing, and you brought it up yourself, the other big news story from Syracuse this weekend, and I mean, we spent almost 45 minutes on just Syracuse. Is it Phoenix is back? Like, that card, the finale card, kind of... Is it Phoenix in Standard has kind of always missed something, in my opinion? It has. It's been missing things. It was never consistent. I tried it early on from Guilds, was it Guilds or... Allegiance, where
it started out in Guild.
Yeah, like I tried really hard to you keep trying and you can't get it together. However, Finale of Promise, now you got something.
Yeah,
you know, so it looks like they took out one of the Jumpstart cards. Probably it looks like Maximize Velocity is what they took out.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. That's such a huge improvement.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and the thing about Is It Phoenix is that the biggest problem with the deck was always the consistency.
Yeah.
I mean, because the explosiveness was always there. Because, I mean, you still have the Is It Drake shell, where you're going to play a Crackling Drake, and it's going to be, you know, like a 12-4. You know, that's still great. But being able to say, all right, I've cast a bunch of spells, I've killed, you know, you've killed my Phoenixes, okay, you know, and they would run out of gas if they didn't have a bunch of their card draw spells. Now with Finale of Promise, they're like, I'm going to do this for X is 2, so 4 mana. I'm going to copy Chart of Course and Shock, or Opt. I'm going to Opt first. Okay, we'll Opt that to the bottom, draw a card. Okay, Chart of Course goes off, draw 2. Oh, look, I'll discard this other Phoenix that was in my hand now. Now I have 4. Oh, by the way, I've just cast 3 spells. Dead.
Yeah, it was... It's back.
Plus 2... Also, too, don't forget, they probably have Saheeli in play. They just got 3 triggers off of that. So even if they don't kill you, they got 3 extra creatures on the board for next turn.
And I got to tell you, I would not be surprised to see somebody start... I don't see him in the sideboard, but I'm kind of surprised Tybalt's not in that sideboard.
The thing is, the real trick with Saheeli is you're casting all these spells, you're getting your triggers, blah, 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 blah. You get your Phoenixes back, you minus the Healy, turn one of your servos into another Phoenix.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, so that boy has haste, and he's flying, he's a 3-2, and there's 3 extra damage
for
free.
For 9. Right.
Yeah. It has a lot more consistency, it has a lot more angles that it can attack you with. I'm not convinced yet, though, that it's a permanent mainstay. It definitely has reasserted itself as something to be considered. But again, I think that the metagame right now is still young enough. Because Jeskai Super Friends, 4-Color Dread Horde, Esper Super Friends weren't around last week. They were not even there last week.
Right.
So this metagame is still shifting. The fact that I went 9 rounds, saw 8 different decks, and didn't even see the deck that won, that tells me a lot. That tells me a lot about this metagame, that it is extremely healthy. It's varied. And, you know, it'll be a matter of, for right now, picking the deck for the week that's going to be the best if you're going to a larger tournament.
Yes.
Smaller events like FNMs, you know, roll with what you're comfortable with. I'm not going to switch off of Esper Control. I'm going to make some changes, but I'm going to stick with what I'm familiar with.
Right. I mean, it's obvious, too. I mean, Wizards even acknowledged it today. I mean, we're not even talking about it, really, but there was a BNR today. There was a BNR announcement, and nothing touched Standard, so it's not in here, but, I mean, some of the Pauper cards got hit.
Crickets.
But it even said it. They're like, the two other formats are really healthy right now, and they're not sure how War of the Spark is going to shake out in Modern, so they didn't want to go crazy yet.
Yeah, they got their eye on a couple things, they said. Yeah. They're looking at a couple of the degenerate combo decks that have appeared.
Well, Neo's the big one.
Well, so. There's also, don't forget, Karn the Great Creator and Mycosynth Lattice.
Yeah, ooh.
Because that says your opponent... can't do anything in the rest of the game.
Yeah, pretty much. So, I mean, you know, obviously with that, I mean, I think, is there anything else you want to talk about with Syracuse? I mean, I'd love to hear some of what you, I mean, I guess you hung out with the Kerwin guys, right?
Yeah, there was a bunch of them. There was like maybe 5 or 6 of them from Kerwin's that were there. over the weekend. And after day one, we went to Dinosaur this time to eat, sort of all commiserate together because none of us made day two. the closest one was actually Dan.
Josh. Oh.
He went 5-4. He didn't make it. But looking at this, he played in the Standard Classic on Sunday. He made 10th place at the Standard Classic.
You're kidding.
With Esper Control. So
you wondering if you shouldn't have played the Standard Classic?
I had no intention of playing the Standard Classic on Sunday, only because I wasn't going to be there for another 7 or 8 hours.
True.
If it wasn't for the big prize, quote unquote, of the day, my original plan was to play a sealed event and then a draft and then go home. But after the sealed event was over, I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready to go. I've had a lot of fun, but I think I'm ready to go.
How'd you do in the sealed?
Sealed event. It was a 4-round event, and I went 2-1-1.
That's not bad.
My only loss was in the last round. I actually had a really awesome sealed pool. I was very happy with it. I wasn't happy with it at first, and this will actually lead us into stupid mistake number 2 of the weekend, which actually cost me a game.
Ooh, those are always fun.
Well, actually, it didn't cost me a game. I was dead anyway. I'll put it that way. I was dead anyway, but I had Jace, Chandra, 2 Jayas, Awakening of Vitugazi.
I love that card.
And Spellkeeper Weirds.
Okay.
So I could recur Awakening of Vitugazi.
Right.
So going through, won the first round, drew the second round, won the third round. Going to the fourth round, it goes almost to time. We're the last ones that are still playing. The judge comes over. I think her name was Sam. She was super nice. She was the one that was overseeing our event.
Sure.
And the opponent that I'm playing, he has Kasmina, Dovin, and like a makeshift battalion. And just he's attacking me. He's getting some damage in. I stabilize, and we're basically ground stalled forever. And he eventually draws his answer. I think it's Rescuer Sphinx. He recurs his. He bounces his Kasmina, recasts, and starts making tokens. He's got me. We're in extra turns. He's got me dead the next turn. There's nothing I can do about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to lose, but I'm going to go out in style. So, my side of the board, I had I also had a Karn's Bastion. So, I'm proliferating. I have an Ugin's Conjurant that is a 12-12. But I can't do anything with it because he keeps throwing Dovin's ability on it.
Bastard.
So it's not dealing or being dealt damage. But right. It did actually end up helping me in a sense that actually I'm glad the judge was sitting there. He had used Dovin's ability and attacked. I blocked with it. And I said, well, here's a question. Since I'm blocking with this, does Dovin's damage prevention prevent the counters from being removed? And she's like, let me see the cards for a second. So she's reading them both. She goes, yeah, so since Dovin's ability creates a prevention shield over the prevention ability of Ugin's Conjurant, the damage is never dealt to begin with, so it's not there to be prevented, so there's no counter to be removed. So keep that in mind. So that was cool. So I had basically an immortal Ugin's Conjurant, which was great.
That works, yeah.
So he had his big flyer. I was at four life. He had 4 in the air. I had nothing I could do. I had 5, 10, 12 mana. 4 of it was green. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to lose anyway, but I'm going to have some fun. So I tap 5, cast Awakening of Vitugazi on one of my forests, turn it into a 9-9. I pay 2 mana, sacrifice my Spellkeeper Weird to get Awakening of Vitugazi back in my hand. I cast it again, targeting another land. So there I am with 2 9-9 Vitugazis. Judge goes, let me see that card real quick. Yeah, legendary tokens.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, that sucks.
But, like I said, I was going to lose anyway, and for that split second, my opponent, his name was Jay. I actually gave him a card to have us check us out.
And cool.
He said he was going to let his friends know about the podcast, so hopefully, Jay, if you're listening, that was a great match, and he agreed with me afterwards. That was an awesome match. He did acknowledge that he knew about the ability that I had forgotten about. And I said, that's okay, that's probably true, but I bet for that split second you'd probably crap in your pants. He's like, yeah, a little bit. But if, wow. It would have worked if I had targeted the same land twice. It would have worked, because then it would have been an 18-18.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's not awesome at all, but I'm kind of glad you had a good time. I really am sorry I missed it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I had a great time with my fiance. I mean,
oh yeah,
adventure. But you know, obviously, next time I want to go. But you know what? We're gonna just bypass combat, go right into
main phase.
And here's the thing. I mean, we did get an email from, you know, Liz in Oshkosh, but we'll get her next week. It's not a big deal. I want to talk a little bit. Wrapping things up because we're getting short on time. Man, there's been some fallout, man. We started talking about it last week. For those of you that didn't listen to last week's show, first of all, y'all suck.
Yeah.
But secondly, you know, we talked a little bit about Jerry Thompson and him leaving. And if you listen to any other podcast or you follow anything else on Magic, you're aware of what happened. But, I mean, for those that don't know, Jerry Thompson quit the NPL last week with a very long statement that he wrote on his Twitter. And he spoke a little bit about it on his podcast, which I actually listened to this week, about why he quit. He quit the NPL basically because, not so much in protest, he's just like, I don't want to deal with it. I guess Wizards has been remarkably inconsistent with communication, inconsistent with what it is that they want, how to qualify for NPL.
Understatement of the year.
Yeah, no kidding. How to qualify for Mythic Championships, how to, you know, everything's kind of been in a haze. So he was just frustrated, and he was like, listen, I'm not going to deal with this. I don't have to deal with it anymore. So, and don't get me wrong, they kind of screwed him, because while he was NPL, he wasn't really getting pro points anymore. And they said, you know, hey, when you quit NPL, if you quit NPL, you're just going to get your pro, you're going to have your same amount of points, you know, there. Well, because it's been over a year since he did some of the stuff, like, he's at bronze now. And he's like...
Yeah, but there really isn't bronze, silver, gold, and platinum anymore.
I know, but that's what they call it. He's like, he doesn't even like qualify for a Mythic Championship right now, and it, which is, to me, is not outrageous, but I mean, it is Jerry Thompson.
Yeah,
like how does he not qualify? And he's to the point where he's like, you know, hey, you know, when it comes to competitive Magic, I've been doing this for so long that I'm not even going to really worry about it. I'm going to help other people be competitive and get some joy out of that, and I'm sure I'll be back. But, I mean, he's not saying he's gone, but he's pretty much, like, saying he's not going to be totally,
super committed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of something I wanted to talk about a little bit. I mean, the replacements is kind of really where a lot of this news was, because... If you remember when MPL first started, they said we're going to take the top 32 Magic players. These are Magic players. They're the ones who are going to be the Pro League. They're the ambassadors of the game.
Well, it's even in the name, Pro League.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but then they went, and with this latest round, now nobody can argue Autumn Burchett after their fantastic win at Mythic Championship 1.
Yeah.
You know, they were obviously, everybody said that they were an oversight. Like, they should have been in it. However, with this new set, these two, on one hand, nobody's really griping or complaining about Jessica Estefan. Nobody's, you know, they're like, she's the top female player. No, she's not outranking some of the men. However, you know, it's important that we have a female. It's important that we, you know, for this representation, and so that, you know, girls who are playing Magic and sitting in front of the computer and playing Arena have somebody to look up to. And the one that everybody's kind of talking about is Savic. And again, he's a good player. But everybody mentions the fact that, hey, he picked up Arena 6 weeks before the Invitational. Before that, he hadn't been playing Arena. He'd been out of paper Magic for years.
Well, he also has never played in a GP.
Yeah.
Or a Pro Tour, for that matter.
And so, but now all of a sudden because he gets so many Twitch viewers, is the only reason they can say it. So what a lot of people are upset about is it seems like Wizards is kind of changing the rules again, where they originally said, hey, you know, it's the top 32 players in Magic. Now they're saying, hey, we're going to kind of put in who we want to put in, and we're not really going to be beholden to any of that. And it's, I guess my question is, do you feel, Aramis, that this is, you know, is it hurting the legitimacy of the league to not have the best players and instead be looking at something else?
Short answer, yes.
Okay.
Longer answer, I think if they were going to go, like, with we'll get to Savic in a minute. But talking about Jessica,
yeah,
I'm glad she's in. She deserves
it. Yeah, everybody says that. Like, she's amazing. And she's really good.
She's a good player. She totally deserves her spot. I'm not going to say that Savic doesn't deserve his spot, but we'll get to that in a second. If diversity was their thing, and if Autumn Burchett and Jessica are their diversity inclusions, they should have been there from the start.
Amen.
They should have, when they formulated their initial 32, they should have said, okay, we want to have X number of people from these, from rankings, but we want to have...
Because they're world.
Yeah, regions and everything else, but we also want to make sure that we account for any other, underrepresented or marginalized groups that we can. And that way, Autumn should have been there and Jessica should have been there from the start. My problem with Savic is that he's not a pro.
No.
And this is supposed to be the Magic Pro League. So if they want to have Savic in there, they need to figure out what they want this league to be. I believe Saffron Olive had an article on MTG Goldfish today talking about this, and he gave a couple of examples of ways that you could possibly fix it.
Right.
And one of the things that he did was, okay, have a pro league, just professionals, just the best of the best, 32 of them.
Right.
And then have one that's more dedicated to streamers.
Yeah.
And so more of a, not so much a promotion league, but more of the entertainment aspect of it. So you'd have, like, Savic. You'd have, I don't know, Brian Kibler, Day 9.
Nerd Girl.
MTG Nerd Girl. Numoth the Nummy. People like them in that league.
To put it to you mildly, I don't know if he said this or what, or if I'm even just saying it right now, is that, okay, we have a pro league. We have a Savic in the pro league. We don't have a Luis Scott Vargas in the pro league. Is that okay?
Yeah. Well,
my answer is no.
Or even whoever was number 33.
Yeah.
Or 100, for that matter.
Well, no, but it that's just it. It's like there are certain people that are not in the top 32, but that are names, that are fans, that are already representatives of this game. Luis Scott Vargas is definitely one of them. I could make a case for Saffron Olive. Any number of people.
Well, Saffron Olive would probably fall more into the category of Savic. I don't know if Saffron Olive's
right,
been to a content creator.
He's a
player. But here's the thing. He does play, but here's the thing. Putting Savic in the league sort of, for lack of a better term, spits in the face of all the other professionals, or not even professionals, but all the other players who have put in all that work to get to PTs, to perform well, if not win at PTs. All those ones that have, made professional Magic their lifeblood, their spot's being given to a guy who picked up Magic 2 months before the Invitational.
Because he got invited to the Invitational because he has 100,000 Twitch followers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's tough, and it's like you really don't want to make it sound like you don't want Savic to be there, because he obviously is good at what he does.
And he was great, and he's fun to watch.
He top four at the Invitational, which is great, but it's the Invitational.
But it's not just that. He was reactionary, too. Like, there was a certain level of showmanship that he had. He knew there was a camera on him. Mm-hmm. So when something happened, a lot of them would be like, and just nod. Savic would be like, he's animated.
Yeah, he's demonstrative.
Yeah, it's a problem. I think it's a problem with this league overall. I think because they haven't trained these Magic players to be streamers, and, it's going to be an interesting concept to see how Savic does. Savic is a gamer. Savic will crack the code. But maybe if he doesn't, if Savic doesn't do well, they're only going to say he's just a streamer and he'll quit.
Well,
What'll happen is he'll be discounted.
The one good thing about that is that these contracts are only for 1 year. So once the season's over, they have to pick a new 32. I think after this season, they need to reset. And if like I said, going back to what I was saying before, if they do a league for just professionals and a league for just like content creators, entertainers, or just the ones that can get you the views on Twitch, I'm okay with that.
Divisions that have
divisions, but have two separate leagues. Put 32 in each. I'm okay with that many people. And what you do is when it comes down to time to choose slots for Mythic Invitationals, whether it's the paper or the online version, the arena ones. You take the top 16 of each and give them the automatic invites. You make them duke it out amongst themselves like they're doing now with the MPL. You make them, you split them up into four divisions. You let them duke it out for a few weeks. The top 16 at the end of that season, or however they want to call it, get their qualifications for that particular Mythic Championship. So if it's a paper Mythic Championship, you got 16 arena players who have to play paper. If it's an arena Mythic Championship, you got 16 paper players who have to go online. Make it so you're sort of cross-training everybody as they go, so that way, okay, Savich, guess what, buddy? You got to pick up a Legacy deck.
Ooh. Wow, that's a little hurtful. I mean, and expensive, but I get your point.
Well, you know what? If they're sponsored, they should be able to get one.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, but yeah, so I mean, it's going to be interesting over the coming weeks. We're going to talk
work.
A little bit more. Yeah, we're going to
talk a little more. MPL needs some serious work.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go through that. I mean, so, I mean, it's going to bring us right now. I mean, you know, let's go ahead and get right into, you know.
End step.
And we're going to start picking up our cards, putting them back in the boxes, getting the table nice and cleared off for next week. And I think over the next coming weeks, we're going to talk about this more, the MPL. It's definitely news. But right now, I think we're going to back ourselves out of here. We're getting at about the 105 mark. Both Aramis and I, you know, we can be found on various points of the internet. So we both stream Arena on the Planeswalker podcast channel on Twitch. So look up Planeswalker's podcast there. And you can actually also follow me on Twitch at MindCrime73. And since I moved my office, I'm actually on there a little more. Plus, I get to play with the green screen. But, you know, so look me up there, MindCrime73.
Yeah, and Benson just lied by saying that we both stream, because we really know that he's the one that streams right now. I don't stream
at
all.
Yeah, I'm pretty
And that's on me. I'll get there, guys. I'll get there.
You'll get there. You need a green screen, man. I'll build you one.
Yeah, it's right now. It's more than just a green screen that I need. But if you know, by some miracle, I am on Twitch, you can find me at RmekWRX. If Twitter's more your speed, I try to tweet now as much as I can on our personal Twitter account, which is at PlainsTalkerPod on Twitter, because I don't have my own Twitter account because I actually don't like Twitter that much. But don't tell anybody.
But you did all right with it this week. I was pretty impressed with it. So,
well, it was part of my business communications class in college, so I knew how to tweet. I just don't really care too much.
Meanwhile, I do tweet on this. Meanwhile,
because
I work in the technology field, I have a personal Twitter and have since like the first year was out.
Because
look at my Twitter. My Twitter is at @WRBenson. And of course, you can actually always follow us on Facebook. Just look up Planeswalker podcast, like and follow our page there, and obviously you can watch the live show as we stream it. So
we're doing right now. Hey guys,
which we are right now. So yes, we have 3 viewers right now. So hey.
Yep. And so if you're listening to this after it's been recorded, you know, sorry.
Come watch us on Mondays.
Yeah. Finally, you can send us emails and even ask for advice in our Ask Aramis section, where I can offer you tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. I'm sorry we didn't get to the emails tonight. SCG Syracuse was kind of the, you know, big old nasty shark that ate everything. But yeah, somebody actually came up with a song that you said that they named a bunch of magic cards you could do that song to, and one of them was Sharkdo Crab.
Shark, do crab, do do. Oh, that works. Yeah,
it does work. It's terrifying. But yes, if you do decide to email us, our address is podcast@planeswalkerspodcast.com.
And finally, folks, you can actually find us as well on iTunes as well as Stitcher. I do believe we're on almost anywhere you can get a podcast. Google Play, I know we're in. Any number of other podcast catchers, but especially iTunes. If you have an iPhone or anything like that, please go and leave us a review in iTunes. It does help the show. Share it with your friends. Let them know that we're here. If you got a play group or anything, we'd love to we're the podcast by casuals for casuals. But as we sit here now, we're going to start getting ourselves out of here. For Aramis Perez, this is Will Benson. We will be back next Monday night around 8 o'clock to discuss some more standard, any sort of news. So make sure you reach out to us through social media. And good luck if you're playing on Friday night. And remember, until next time, remember to always keep a few of your lands untapped. Have a good week. Take care. And we'll see you soon.